Blog Talk Radio. Wherever you're dialing in from all over the globe, I welcome you to the Living by Design show. I am your host, Kathy Holloway Hill, and you have me for the next 30 minutes as we embark upon a brand new segment in our Design My Life series. And if you've been keeping up with the series, I'm sure you have made a lot of progress, and I'm extremely proud of all the email notes and all the outpouring of love and appreciation that I've been getting about this Design My Life series. So continue to listen, because today we have a wonderful guest. She is amazing, and she is going to help us kick off the next series or the next segment in our series, which is relationships. And you know that relationships are the common thread of all great connections in our life, and it's very necessary in both our personal and professional lives. And we have the amazingly wonderful Dr. Wendy Walsh. Dr. Wendy's resume is so long and so extensive. She has a PhD in clinical psychology, and you've seen her on every single TV show that exists. The View, CBS This Morning, Ricky Lake, The Doctor, CNN, Inside Edition, Good Morning America, Today, Fox News. You name it, she's been on there. I actually saw her on the Steve Harvey show the very first time, and she just really, really, really was superb. So I had to have her on the show because my listeners are the best listeners on the planet. So I am going to bring Dr. Wendy on the line. Hello, Dr. Wendy. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Oh, you deserve that and more. You are amazing, and I am so happy that you have agreed to talk to my listeners.
Well, I'm certainly obsessed with the science of relationships, and I think that so many people need a few tips and skills on how to have healthy relationships.
Yes, absolutely, because with the work that I do, I actually started my career. I have a master's in psychology as well, but I started my career on the technology side, because someone else designed that life for me, and my listeners have heard me talk about that story a lot, so I won't go into all of that. But this has always been my passion, so I love what you said about being obsessed with that. I love people who are so passionate to the point of being obsessed with a topic. Those are the type of guests that I love to have, so great. I am so glad you said that. I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in and just start picking your brilliant brain and asking you, in your professional opinion, now we're going to be talking about throughout this segment, because we're going to be talking about relationships for the next several weeks. So today we're going to focus on personal relationships. Now we'll get to the professional side and all that, because I know you listeners are going to be emailing me saying, well, what about my work life? But today we're going to focus on your personal relationships, because they both affect each other. So when we're talking about our personal relationships with our significant other or our spouse or friends or whatever, what do you think, Dr. Wendy, are the three most critical ingredients for having a successful relationship?
Well, I think we have to understand, so I would say the first one would be expectations. We have to understand that relationships are an exchange of care. So if you've got a relationship where somebody's doing all of the caregiving and someone's doing all of the taking, that doesn't work, nor does it work if people are just too independent and aren't even expressing their needs to their others, to their significant other. So I think sort of understanding what a relationship is, that two people can accomplish more together than they ever could as individuals, is crucial. They can accomplish more financially. We certainly know that marriage creates financial domination. Secondly, it's better for your health. And if you create something, whether it's a business, a family, children, you can do so much better with a partner. So setting your expectations up means that a relationship is not supposed to be hot, exciting sex. If you've been watching too much Snooki in a hot tub, this is not what long-term monogamy is, okay? And you need to just understand that sometimes there are going to be ups and there are going to be downs. So it means adjusting your expectations. But the second most important thing to having a healthy relationship are having good conflict resolution skills. You know, any two people can get along if you've got health and you've got money. Right? If you have no problems, you've got health and money, both people can be polite and get along. But, you know, a relationship is about getting along when there's stress, getting along when there's two tired parents and a crying baby in the house, getting along when somebody's sick, getting along when financial woes happen, and understanding how to get through conflict and how to compromise. You know, the road to intimacy is one that is paved with rupture followed by repair. And it is actually in the repair process that you grow closer. So having healthy conflict resolution skills are very, very important. So if the first is adjust your expectations to understand really why you're there and what you're hoping to accomplish, and the second would be healthy conflict resolution skills. The third thing is something that that applies to the first two as well. You've got to have compassion and empathy. You've got to be able to put yourself in your partner's shoes and imagine what they're experiencing. If you're in a relationship and it's all about your needs and what have you done for me lately, then you're not going to have a healthy relationship in the long run.
I absolutely love it. Love it. And I totally agree with everything you said. Okay, wonderful. Now let me move to a different area, and this is going to be kind of intense. I'm also a life coach, and I see this a lot with my clients where people take on the issues of others, meaning that
right.
We know that in a relationship, in order to be healthy, that you've got to resolve previous life emotional dramas, traumas, whatever. But as we become adults, when you rewind all the way back to your childhood, had a dysfunctional upbringing or the environment wasn't healthy in some aspect. And then when we come up and we become adults, we still hold on to the beliefs of our parents or our caregivers or society or the community, the media, whatever. And now we've taken on those issues. They're not really ours, but we've made them ours. And in addition to everything else that we've experienced, we haven't resolved, and we're holding on to everybody else's stuff and how everybody defines different things. And so it becomes a part of us. How do we get that out and let it go so that we can be healthy within ourselves? Does that make sense?
So I disagree with one thing. It's not that they aren't part of us. Our issues are part of us. And early childhood programming creates a blueprint for love, and sometimes that love has a lot of pain associated with it. And that feels normal to us. That feels familiar to us. We know we can survive pain. We don't know if we can survive happiness. That could be new, totally new. So it's important to understand that what our belief system is a result of what was done to us. But now that we're adults, we can take personal responsibility and make choices that are different, even if they're scary, scary choices. So that means being attracted to people who can love you back, being attracted to people who can give you care. Sometimes it's a big leap to do that for some people, these especially young women who may be bad boy chasers or older women that are bad boy chasers. It's like, when I look at that, I see a woman with an anxious attachment disorder who's going to make daddy stay this time. She's going to change him and fix him. So it's about stepping out of those early life programming and making decisions, sort of reparenting yourself, just understanding that you are your own parent to yourself, and the dialogue inside your head, is it going to be critical because you heard those words when you were young, or is it going to be filled with self-love? So that's the most important piece, is learning to love and accept yourself and give yourself consoling words, and then making choices that will bring you happiness. Because you do have power. You do have control,
yes.
Much more than you think you
yes.
do.
So true. And I'm glad you brought self-love in there, because I know that is a critical aspect of releasing some of the toxic beliefs that we may have adopted in our childhood and you know, allowing that to stay with us throughout our lives. And you're right, because that behavior, that environment that we have been exposed to, now you're right, it becomes a part of us. And, I mean, I even found myself into a toxic marriage. You know, my first marriage was very mm-hmm. toxic, and because of, you know, some dysfunctional things that occurred with me. And I had to discover or realize that there was value in me, and I had to see that mm-hmm. myself. No amount of validation from someone else is going to give me that. And so you
of
mentioned self-love.
Not.
So
right.
Yeah, exactly. So
and I think
I
a lot of people confuse a lot of people confuse self-love with selfishness, and they're two completely different things. People who are selfish and narcissistic and into themselves are people who are really insecure. People who love themselves are so secure within themselves that they can care for other people well. You know that whole that thing the flight attendants say, you have to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help someone else.
Yes.
So your own oxygen mask is being able to care for yourself. So let's talk about a little bit about what self-love means. At the very basic, self-love means caring for your body. That means giving yourself healthy nutrition that it needs, an adequate amount of sleep, and an adequate amount of exercise. Because if your physiology, if your biology is not in alignment, if it's not in sync, if it's not healthy, you're not going to be able to make the great intellectual and emotional decisions, because your brain's not going to be functioning well. So the first step of self-love is caring for yourself before somebody else. That's putting on your own oxygen mask. That may be saying to a spouse, I don't care that you're going to drink all night. I'm going to bed early because I'm getting up to go for a jog in the morning. But caring for yourself first. Then the next step is forgiving yourself. You know, what happens is we spend our life, we're all humans, nobody gets out of here alive, and nobody gets out of here without making mistakes. But if we keep a critical voice in our head that says we're bad because we've made those mistakes, then we'll never be able to move on. We'll, in fact, do things that support the critical voice. Oh, yeah, you're right, I'm bad anyway, I might as well just go do this bad thing again because that's how I am. But what about being a good mother to yourself and saying, it's okay, darling. You're totally forgiven. You made a mistake. You were young. You didn't know. And now let's move on and make different choices. So being able to forgive yourself is very, very important. And then the third thing is just making these really wise, not impulsive, thoughtful, meaningful decisions in your choice of relationship partner and how you will relate within that relationship. And that's being self-loving. Is caring for yourself and your needs. And that's very different from selfishness. If you are whole, if you reward yourself with healthy relationships, by choosing healthy relationships, if you take care of your body, then you will be free to be a kind, giving, loving person to others.
That is so true. One of the questions that I ask, and this is, I mean, my workshops are not even about relationships. My workshops are, I typically work with corporations, and I go and I do team building and dealing with change. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I always ask the attendees is, what is the number one most important relationship you'll ever have in your life? They don't have a clue. No one knows. I mean, they answer everything. God, my mother, my children, you know, and I'm saying it's you. It's the relationship you have with yourself, and it's also the number one most neglected relationship because people just don't get what you just said.
Right. Well, again, they've also been told, don't be selfish, and they've confused this with selfishness. In fact, the most selfish people are actually the ones who are most insecure, most narcissistic, and they don't feel secure in themselves. But feeling secure in yourself is accepting you, complete with your flaws, and trying every day to be a slightly better person than you were the day before. And, hey, we all slide up and down. I just got back from a month of vacation where my cholesterol probably went so high. I ate so much fat. So I know that this isn't forever. I know I came back, and I'm back on my coconut milk, my cow's milk. And that's how it is. You got to also tell yourself it goes in ebbs and flows. And the same thing with our relationships. You know, we're not always going to be the perfect parent. We're not always going to be the perfect wife or the perfect husband. But we can be good enough. And I think that a lot of people sometimes throw in the towel on good enough relationships, because that's all you need to thrive, a good enough relationship.
Exactly. And so many people look for validation in other people and things and status and money and appearance and all these things, because they are lacking that one true ingredient that they need. And the way I always describe it to people who attend my workshops is that, how can a car run on empty?
Right.
It's not about being selfish or narcissistic, but you've got to fill your gas tank. If you're not fueled, then you can't give anything. You can't go. You can't do. You can't be
right.
anything to anyone else.
And
if your
you've
tank
got to fuel
empty.
You've got to fuel yourself with meaningful things. Nobody
right.
lies on their deathbed and says, I wish I'd worked more. I wish I'd made more money. It would have been such a better life. Nobody does. They all say, I wish I'd spent more time with my kids. I wish I'd done the things in my life that I always wanted to do. So, you know, fueling yourself may be fueling yourself with good, meaningful things like education or spending
right.
time in nature, which is really good for our biology and also our mental state, or fueling yourself with positive relationships. You know, but running around and buying things is such a fleeting moment of contentment and happiness comes from that. Or relationships that are really false. You know, they're not real relationships. It's pretend power. Oh, this person likes me, so I must be great. That's pretend power. If you know that you're great, you won't need that other person's validation.
That's right. Absolutely. And as you stated earlier, knowing that you're great in a powerful way and not be humble. It's a humble greatness.
Yeah.
Now I would be remiss if I know my listeners are definitely going to want me to mention this because I hear it a lot. And that's when you find yourself entering into a relationship where there is a blended family. Your partner
mm-hmm.
has children from another relationship. What are the key ingredients to making that work?
I have only one thing to say. Please look through everything through the child's eyes, through the child's lens and what they're experiencing, and put your adult, egotistical, narcissistic needs aside. This should be about the kids, because guess what? A home is a nest for children. If you are entering that nest, it should still be all about the kids, whether they're yours, his, or both. And I think that the problem is these adults try to have almost infantile, childish needs themselves, and they just assume that these children will have to adapt, you know, or they will have to behave. Listen, this is not a fun situation for any child. I don't know any child who says, oh, my God, I'm so excited. My mom's getting married to some stranger guy. I'm getting a new daddy. There's no child that ever says that. Their world is being disrupted again after divorce. So it's very important that you go slowly. I would suggest that you not expose the children to your early dating or romantic relationship. And if that means that you're not going to see each other as often, that's fine. Grow it slowly. And put the children's needs first. If children get upset about things, listen to them. They have a voice. That doesn't mean that they are allowed to control the situation, but you have an obligation to validate their feelings and assure them that you're not leaving them, that you'll always be there for them, that tell them where the boundaries will be of this other person in their life, and let them know what the roadmap is going to be for the future.
Perfect. I absolutely love it. Now I'm going to take it a step further, because you mentioned expectations as being one of the critical ingredients for a successful relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What if these children that you're coming into the relationship are adult children, and they are adult children who are dependent on the parent mm-hmm. that you're connecting with? And let's just say that it's a female, because I actually hear this a lot. It's a female, and she's, you know, marrying this gentleman, and his adult daughters are very dependent on him for financial
mm-hmm.
support.
Yep, I have a friend going through that right now. Well, you know what? They're still children. And they're still his children, and they're still part of him. And if you love him, you're going to love every little piece of him. And keep that in mind. If you go into it thinking, what can I do to separate these kids from him, then you're basically putting a condition on your love for him. You're saying, I'm only going to love him under this condition. Ever heard of unconditional love? That means accepting and understanding the guy and his for whatever reason, his needs to keep those girls close, his needs to keep them dependent. Help him explore what those needs mean instead of putting your foot down and saying, well, it's her or me. You make a decision. Because that's not love. Ultimatums are not love. So right. It's about really figuring out what it's about. And, you know, you say they're adult children, but when I was practicing psychotherapy, people used to ask me, do you do adult psychotherapy or child psychology? And I said, it's all child psychology. Just plenty of them have grown-up bodies. So
right.
Keep in mind, these adult kids are still children, and they're feeling the same kinds of feelings as a 10-year-old would feel. Somebody's taking my daddy. So
right.
Your goal is going to be to get them into alliance with you, not create adversarial relationships with them. That's not going to help anybody.
And you mentioned, I'm going to continue to go back to expectations because that's huge when you mention that, because even if you're trying to help, it's just how you say it. It's not always what you say, but how you say it. I mean, if you want him to try to help them be independent adults, and you know, I understand that because I hear so many different stories around this topic. I understand you wanting everyone to be an independent adult. Well, you can't do that by, as you stated, you know, making demands and putting your foot down and saying, well, it's her or me. You can't do it that way.
Yeah, then you're being a spoiled daughter as well.
Right.
It's about exploring, and again, a lot of these issues should be dealt with long before you're thinking of getting married or moving in together. This is not something
right.
you deal with, you know. And it's also exploring what his feelings are relating to those girls. I mean, maybe that daughter or two or son have become his primary attachment figure. And so
right.
over time, he's going to shift his attachment from them to you. But he's not going to do it on one Sunday. Okay, you're out. I'm replacing you. So there are, you know, and again, I can't stress enough how often people should seek the help of a professional counselor or therapist who understands the underlying psychological dynamics. And you can enter couples therapy after a first date while you're working things out. The more helpers you have and the more tools and skills you can learn, the healthier your relationship will be.
And there are so many dynamics to that scenario, Dr. Wendy, because we don't know what that parent may be experiencing. Maybe there's some guilt there that, you know, he did marry someone else besides their mother, and maybe he wasn't around as much when they were young children. We don't know what may be going on. So we can't just assume that, hey, like you said, it's him or me. We can't have a selfish attitude. And I tell my clients this all the time. You've got to love their children unconditionally just as you love that man or woman unconditionally.
Because their children are a piece of them. If you're saying I'm only
exactly.
going to love a part of you, then that's not
that's
fair.
Right.
That's a condition.
It is. And there's nothing better than having an opportunity for a child to not just see their parents, but see other positive role models in their life. Children can't have enough positive role models in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the crucial thing is consistency in these relationships. You don't want a revolving door of parental figures. That's the worst thing for kids.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, consistent yes. adult relationships are very important to children.
And try to maintain that longevity, because jumping in and out, in and out, in and out, oh, my goodness. It's just,
well, what is it teaching kids about love and commitment? You know, people
right.
think love, by the way, is a feeling. Love is not a feeling. Love is a verb. It's an action word. And the verb is to give. So love is about making an intellectual choice to give. It starts off with sexual passion, and people confuse that because your brain gets assaulted with a cocktail of hormones and neurotransmitters that feel so good. And people say, oh, I'm in love, because they're in that big delusion that happens in the early stages of relationships. But as soon as that dies down and your brain gets accustomed to the dopamine rush of a new relationship, some people think they've fallen out of love. No, you're now actually given the opportunity to be in love, which is take action and do the work of love.
Absolutely. Actually, in a second marriage, and it could not be any more different. Oh, my goodness. The first one, these are like night and day. The first one was very toxic. The second one is just amazingly wonderful. I had to spend time alone which a lot of people are afraid to do, in between relationships. You've got to spend time alone to purge all those unresolved bad emotions, resentment, bitterness, anger, and party. Do all of that before you get into the next relationship. Don't take
well,
all that baggage with you.
You have to do specific kind of alone time, because some alone time isn't purging and getting over, it's just avoiding. So some people say, well, I stayed single for 2 years, and then they walk out on the dating street and get hit by a truck because they weren't actually growing or learning during that time. They were busy avoiding. So the important thing to understand is that you can learn relationship skills in any kind of relationship. It doesn't have to be a sexual relationship. You can learn relationship skills in relationships with your parents that you may need to do some healing work with. You can practice relationship skills with children, with close friends of the same gender. You can practice with good relationship skills with employees and your bosses. You can practice all these skills that you need with relationships that don't have to be necessarily romantic, and that's important to remember.
Well, I'm loving everything you're saying, Dr. Wendy. Now, you have a massively successful book entitled The 30-Day Love Detox.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to the listeners about that. What's it about?
Well, it's written primarily for women age 18 to 40, and it's about our high-supply sexual economy that we're in right now, where the price of sex has dropped from, well, in my grandmother's generation, it was the price of probably a year of courtship. The price of sex in my generation was 3 dates. Remember the 3-date rule? And today, the price of sex for young people has dropped to the price of 1 well-worded text. And so what happens is when you eliminate courtship,
wow,
is you get players and non-players in the same dating pool, and nobody can tell each other apart. And a lot of women believe some myths about sexuality. For instance, they believe that adopting a male model of sexuality is female sexual freedom, when it's not. Our biology was definitely not meant for hookups. And by the way, men's biology wasn't either. One of the other dangers of a high-supply sexual economy is it pressures good guys to act like players. So I basically, the 30-day love detox is a prescription for slow love. It's a prescription for having less technology in our relationships, more FaceTime, more phone time, and it's about delaying the onset of the sexual relationship until you have built an emotional bond. The book happens to be called The 30-Day Love Detox around one study I found that shows that if you have sex within 30 days of meeting somebody, you have a 90% chance of being broken up within 1 year. So the longer you wait, the better. I actually couldn't find any research to say that waiting too long was too long. So the more you spend time building up an emotional bond, a friendship, and a connection, this will ensure your long chances. Unfortunately, in a high-supply sexual economy, women are feeling pressured to hook up, and they want, you know, women are nice people, they want to comply, so they will have sex with a guy too early, not because they want it, but because they want the guy to like them. The problem is this: men don't fall in love through sex, and plenty of women do. Women's bodies excrete oxytocin, the female bonding hormone, during orgasm. It's the same hormone excreted in massive doses during breastfeeding when women bond with their babies. So what happens is women think, oh, I'm just hooking up for now, and then they start falling in love, and when they confront him about it, he's like, what do you mean? You know, this is all this was supposed to be. This is a friend with benefits. And then these women get depressed. So it's about speaking to the higher man inside each man, too, because there is a good commitment-oriented guy, even in the players, and understanding that women control the pace of the sexual relationship.
Awesome, awesome. And we're coming up on our last minute of the show, Dr. Wendy, and, oh, my God, you have been amazing. Please give my guests
your
contact information, your website, how can they get your book, where is it, all of those things.
Well, come on over to my website, which is drwendywalsh.com. That's drwendywalsh.com, drwendywalsh.com. And from there, you can click through to buy all my books, and 30-Day Love Detox is available everywhere right now in bookstores and online.
Amazing. Awesome. We thank you so much, and we are going to be signing off for now, and we will see you same time next week for another episode of Living by Design. Thank you, and good evening, everyone.
life.